It's like, look, I thought you were over there.
So, yeah, my name's Tyler. I'm a recovered alcoholic. And driving up here, kind of had something cool happen to me. I was behind a police car, and you normally never see somebody in the back of a cop car. You know, you'll see them get arrested, but never do you really see them while you're driving. And I saw this, and it actually reminded me of the last time I got arrested. And I hadn't really thought, I don't really think about when I, you know, passed, like when I've been arrested or, you know, things that I've done. But when I saw this squad car, I was like, man, what's going on? There's somebody in the back of that thing. And I could, in that moment, remember what it felt like to be in a squad car. And I'm sitting driving in a brand new BMW. I couldn't believe it. 5 years ago, I was homeless. And not the homeless driving or sleeping on a friend's couch, but the homeless on the street, right? Where you find a piece of cardboard that's thick enough so you don't feel like you're, you know, cold or you got something covering you, taking care of you. So extremely, extremely honored to be here. I just want to share that thought. Maybe some of you in here are grateful for your recovery and you're not in a jail cell or in a squad car. And I just want to, you know, thank everybody that's here tonight. Few people I know through the years, but it's really cool that everybody's in here for their recovery, right? Whether you want to be here or not. So I'm telling you, I know a lot of people now that have been sober for almost 4 years that have died. So extremely, extremely grateful and honored to be here. How many of you have ever been to Austin Recovery on Cross Park? And I asked that question because, you know, I went to Austin Recovery 5 times in 14 months. And I really wanted to be sober. And I never really got to make it down here until after I got sober. And I was able to do alumni stuff and H&I's. And I remember those 5 times I went to Austin Recovery, man, I was so ungrateful to be in there. There's people like Ken Powers, Karen Moreno, who was my counselor, my detox counselor. She always saw me at my best times. So I'm extremely grateful for Austin Recovery, and I share that because, you know, I was sitting with a friend even just for a little bit before, and he's telling me, he's like, man, I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm like, man, I'm excited to be here to share a little bit about that, because I remember sitting there, you guys, and I couldn't figure it out. Every 3 months, here he comes again. I'm telling you, Vicky, who works in Detoxer Emissions, she knew me. Here he comes again. And you know what? I'd always walk in here so, I have my head down low. I'm like, man, I can't face these people anymore. I got to stop coming back to the same place. I got to find a different area to go to. Let me go to Houston or something. And they really knew who I was. And you know what? Every single time I came into this place, I was always welcomed. So kind of starting, you know, backtrack a little bit here. I come from a family of three. Never really knew my grandparents or my other family too well. But I had a pretty, what I thought, normal life. Definitely wasn't what I portrayed outside. But, like, I had sisters. I had a mother that took care of me. My parents divorced. I remember my dad beating my mom up when I was a kid. Not alcoholically. He just, you know, had rage or whatever. He was a truck driver. And he didn't really know how to handle himself. And, you know, I excelled in pretty much everything I did, right? I played sports. I was a two-sport athlete. I graduated with a B honor roll. And I had a really, really bright future. And everybody was really optimistic and excited for me. So, you know, didn't really have, nobody really expected. So I knew right from wrong, and I knew that marijuana was bad. I knew that cocaine was bad. I knew that heroin was bad. I didn't even really know what heroin was. I knew that if you weren't 21, you weren't supposed to drink. And I had some morals and principles instilled in me as a kid. And never really grew up without, I don't remember being homeless as a kid. My mom said that she had to live in a shelter for a little while. She had me when she was about 20. single mom raising three kids. I remember growing up on what I would, you know, if I were to compare to Austin, like Cesar Chavez or Runberg on a Broadway in Minneapolis, Minnesota, that's where I'm from. And, you know, the house that I lived in was a two-bedroom, and I had two sisters, so we had a bunk bed. The one on the bottom was a futon that could fold out into a couch, and up top was the twin, and I slept on the twin with my two sisters. And at night, I always felt safe, but my mom had to work nights, right? She had to work nights. She's a single mom. And at nights, we'd be home by ourselves, and we lived in a neighborhood that, you know, probably wasn't the best, but there was a square, and then the square is where these, you know, maybe they were in a gang, maybe they weren't, but they would shoot at each other across from the square, and we thought they were fireworks. And, you know, thank God we did think they were fireworks, because it helped us sleep at night. We could write it off. So, you know, kind of humble beginnings, not too much going on, not too crazy, right? And by the way, none of that made me alcoholic, right? I'll explain to you why I drink in a minute, and why I do drugs the way I do, and why I'm an alcoholic, why I'm a heroin addict. But so I finally start to get out of that. My mom remarries, and, you know, it's a little bit more stability. You know, I'm starting to get new Jordans. I'm starting to get a Xbox. I'm starting to get some shit in my life, and like really, really falling in love with materialism and ego just being fed as a kid. And I didn't know that at the time, but again, I know wrong from right, or at least I thought I did. And all of a sudden, 15 years old, you know, we start drinking at bonfires and everything's cool. You know, I'm kind of blind to the warnings. People shared warnings like, well, you shouldn't do that as far as alcohol is concerned. But like everything else, I knew it was bad. I knew you shouldn't smoke weed, and I knew that you shouldn't do cocaine and hard drugs. But like, you know, in my heart, I justified it because it's legal. And for me, I'm 27 years old now. But when I was 18 years old, there wasn't any talk of Colorado legalizing marijuana. So I knew in my heart that I shouldn't be doing that. And, you know, right away, I remember the first night I got drunk, we just drank a bottle of peppermint schnapps straight. We didn't even mix it with anything. It was disgusting. So wasn't drinking to enjoy it at all. We just slammed it. I remember blacking out and crying because we thought we saw a deer and called it Bambi. I don't know, just some drunk charades, you know. And, man, that became a thing for me on the weekends. You know, we'd go get a bottle. I had older step siblings now, and we'd go get a bottle. And, like, I was the kind of the dude that had the car and had some things going for him. So we'd go hit up my brother. He'd go get us a bottle. We'd get drunk for the weekend. We were kind of like the plug for the alcohol, and started to fall in love with that. I started to fall in love with that. So is it 8:20? So, I feel like somebody knows something I don't know. So we drink hard on the weekends, go back to school, go back to practice. My family moved down to Austin, Texas when I was 16 years old. And I was in high school at the time, and I had a girlfriend, and I was a football player and a basketball player, and I had a lot of stuff around me that I didn't want to let go of yet. So I drove down here, and when I started to see the loop arounds on I-35, I said, this place is weird, I don't like it, I'm going to go back to where I'm from. And my dad met me in Minneapolis, enrolled me in school, because they started a week later. I was going to go to Round Rock High School, and I wasn't going to do it. So I got my car, I drove back home. And excelled in my junior year, and then this is where it starts to get fun. So, stay woke. Some of you are sleeping. Stay woke. And instead of drinking, because I also when I drank, I knew that drinking and driving was bad. So all of a sudden, I'm at a party, and there's this guy, and he's crushing up pills. And those of you that know anything about heroin or pills already know what pill I'm talking about. And and I'm sitting there, and this guy's crushing up a pill. And you should try this. What is that? And they're like, it's XYZ, it's Oxycon, but to me it was I didn't know what it was, you know. And they're like, just do it. And I'm like, well, what is it? They're like, it's a prescription, you know. I bought it really fast. I didn't even go watch a YouTube video or do a Google search or anything. Like, I just said, I just did it. Because in my mind, it was a prescription drug. So right away, this is legal, right? So I'm sharing with you guys some of the stuff how my mind works, right? Justified alcohol because it's legal. Justified the pills because it's legal. So now I'm doing pharmaceutical heroin. And we joke around, you know, as a kid, Tyler didn't get to experience Capri Suns on the playground. He jumped straight to heroin. You know, I never smoked weed before I shot dope. So I'm now backtrack, you know, I'm the kid that grew up in the neighborhood, but now he's in the new neighborhood. So I still have some friends from the old neighborhood. So I become the Oxycontin dealer because I know the kids across the track, across the bridge. And this was my justification for doing Oxycontin. Not only was it legal, if you got it prescribed to you, you also could get messed up on the weekends and legally not, you wouldn't have, you're still impaired, but my mind worked like this, it's that I can drive. So I can get messed up on the weekends, have a good time, and still be able to roll around, right? So that's what really made me fall in love with Oxycontin, aside from the feeling and the effect that was produced. Little background on me, you know, now that you know me a little bit better, when I put something in my body, it changed the way I feel, and then I cannot stop on my own will. So I do one of this, I'm off to the races, you guys. So quickly become the Oxycontin dealer, right? Loving life, got like $10,000 cash. I work, I play sports, I still do everything I'm supposed to do. I'm only doing it on the weekends. I'm not even doing it during the week yet. And life's good. And then all of a sudden they start changing the way that they're made and that you can't abuse them anymore. And my life really started to get shitty. And now I'm paying $1.50 a milligram, and like stuff's going by quick. Girlfriend's, I'm losing things, losing that 50-inch plasma. And back in, 2008, to have a 55-inch plasma and be in high school, that was really cool. I'm just losing a lot of stuff. I had a Mitsubishi 3000 GT, and in that time, it was like having a Ferrari. And I quickly sold that for $1,900, and I smoked it like in 2 days. The car was worth way more than $1,900, but I just want to get rid of it really fast. So, you know, I make all these bad decisions that my mom finds out. My mom's down here still. I'm up there, self-will run riot. Nobody can tell me what to do, how to do it, when to come home. I'm staying at my friend's house, and they're kind of, I mean, they were good people, but they were kind of blind to a lot of stuff. I can do whatever I want, when I want, how I want it. And I got a little bit of money, and I got a big ego, and I got some stuff that, you know, really changed the way I feel. It made me feel like I was Superman. So they changed that up. All of a sudden, I hit my mom finds out. Now I'm doing more because she knows now, and I need to numb the way I feel because now my mom knows I'm screwed up. And they ship me away to another state. They're like, go stay with your dad. And I took some Suboxone with me, and I went and stayed with my dad. And I detoxed and drank a lot of alcohol at his house and came back. And when I came back, I just went straight to heroin. And I just started rolling, you know. And I ended up burglarizing a lot of homes, ended up committing some robberies. Getting a lot of trouble, so I'm... Now all of a sudden I need a plane ticket. Now I like Texas, you know. Get me down to Texas. Side note, I absolutely love Texas. I don't plan on leaving or going anywhere anytime soon. And so now I'm here. And the detective that arrested me for burglary, and this is what it brought me back to, you guys, when I saw that guy in the back of that squad car, is a time when I got arrested for burglarizing a home. And by the grace of God, in August, I went and made amends to those people in Minneapolis. I'll share that story, obviously. But I was sitting there, I remember him saying, he said, man, the other dude told on you. And he slammed that door as hard as he could. And I just remember sitting on that blue cushion, and all the walls are white. And that was the first time I went to jail. And I just remember feeling like my life was over. And I detoxed in jail for the first time. And then all of a sudden, 48 hours later, they let me out. I was on a 48-hour hold, and they let me out of there. And that's how I came to Texas. So right away, you guys, I immediately started to settle in over here. I stayed away from the hard stuff and watched my niece, who at the time was like 2 or 3, and my sisters and my family were going to school, and I was kind of the stay-at-home screw up that took care of whatever, you know, normal people that had jobs couldn't take care of, like watch kids, clean the house. And I'm 20 years old at that time. Mind you, a couple months ago, I had the world, you know, in my hand, if you will. So I come down to Austin. I stay away from inquiring about drugs for 6 months. And then I start meeting some people at the apartment complex. One of them, funny, is in here. He's in the back wearing a blue shirt. And that's how I met Rob, who I actually got to sponsor one time. And he's reached out to me when he's needed help, so that's cool. It's weird to see it come full circle in this room at this moment. And finally, I found somebody that had black tar heroin in Austin. And right away, without skipping a beat, 1,200 miles away, here comes that kid again. And I was in hair school at the time. I'm a licensed cosmetologist in the state of Texas, so I'm in hair school, and you know, people are trying to say, man, what's up with your arms? Why are they all beat up like that? And I'm trying to wear long sleeve shirts to hair school and do people's hair, and you know, just completely twacked out of my mind. I don't even show up. If I can't get dope, I can't go to school. So where the healing begins, you know. First time going to Austin Recovery, man, I went to detox, pissed off, scared as hell, didn't know what to expect. And I sat through detox, you guys, and I got out, and I mean, I did what I do, which is I just went right back to my old behaviors. I didn't listen to any of the dudes that stood in here. I remember sitting along the wall, because they used to make you sit against the wall at Cross Park if you were in a detox. And you had to sit against the wall, and then you had to come up here and get a desire marble, and I just would never go get them. I just hated everybody. And I made it out of there, and I just went right back to the same old stuff. I guess maybe lighten the mood a little bit. I remember getting in a fight with a tech one time because the NFC Championship game was on for, it was like Baltimore Ravens and like somebody else. And he came in and he did his job, and he shut it off at 10 o'clock, and that pissed me off. Not only did it piss me off, it pissed all my friends off too, because we're in here together. And I put him on my amends sheet. When I went and made the last of my amends here, you know, a couple months ago, I found that piece of paper and I read it and I said, God, what a delusional person. I was mad at him for doing his job. His job was to shut that TV off at 10 o'clock and make sure everybody went to bed. But boy, was I mad, and I raised hell. Luckily, they didn't kick me out. But typically, you guys, after I got a detox, I one time went right back to my same stuff. And I know this part's a little bit boring, so bear with me. But I, for some reason, I kept on finding myself back here. And it was always state-funded, you know, thank you, God. My family had no resources. My mom makes about $30,000 a year. And she has 3 grown-ass kids at her house with a 3-year-old, right? So I come back into Austin Recovery, you guys, and I come in here and I hear people like Paul Robbins and Mike Tadashi and Charlie Parker and Katie Parker, and I hear all these people sharing in these H&Is, and I'm just like, man, I just wasn't really like that, you know. I'm really different. Like, I know we do the same drugs, but like, I'm different than you. you're 50 years old and your legs are about to fall off. Like, you've been shooting dope in your legs, and I don't look like you, and I wasn't a Marine. And that was my next few little three times. And, I got to meet, the Foleys, and got to meet Will and Brooke at the time. And I got to meet a lot of people at Austin Recovery. And the last time I came in here, you guys, I was so broken. I didn't know I was wanted for robbery in Austin, but I was. And I came in here, and I started begging them to let me in. And mind you, the last three times I AMA'd against medical advice, I went up to the nurse practitioner, whoever it was, and I said, "Give me my stuff. I'm getting out of here." And that's how I left. Other than the first detox, every single time, right? Every single time, here comes Tyler. There he goes. That's how I left. So the beautiful thing about this story, you guys, I was thinking about this, man. I know how to get sober, and I even know how to like stay sober now. But I don't know how the hell I got to this sweet spot of like just being so desperate, I just threw in the towel. So I want to share with you guys a story. When I was in ninth grade, I was in the freshman basketball team, and I walked into the gym, and we're getting ready to practice, and I had a sucker in my hand. And I, mind you, I was a shooting guard, and I was the star of the team. I walked in with a sucker in my hand, and my coach said, "What the hell is that?" And he literally ripped it out of my mouth and threw it at the wall. And I share this story because all my life, I've had just the biggest vision, the biggest dreams, aspirations, hopes, like, this guy's going to do something. All my life. But this is how I show up, the fucking sucker in my mouth. This is going to be easy for me because I'm gifted. Oh, yeah. I'm going to show up to Austin Recovery. This is going to be a certain way for me because I'm really entitled. I'm really delusional. And in ninth grade, I hadn't even drank any alcohol at that point. I've always been selfish, self-centered my whole life. And I walked in there and he took the sucker out, whipped it at the wall, and it shattered because it was like a brand new sucker. I like hadn't even, you know, got to, you know, eat it or suck, you know. I had a little assistance from the front row, but and he threw it at the wall, and it just shed. He's like, just run till I tell you to stop. And that's what I did. I just ran till he told me to stop, and I just took that beating. Like, I'm good at taking beatings, you know. Heroin beat the shit out of me for a long time, like, but I was able to take that beating until I wasn't able to take it anymore. So I came in here and I was like, literally, I was at the Cross Park location where they used to detox us, and I was just sitting there on my hands and knees crying. I'm like, listen, you guys, I'm going to die. Like, I'm really going to die this time. And I don't know what happened, but somehow I got in. Like, that day. Somehow I got in that day. And I had been doing the Walmart booster program or whatever it is, and I was going to Walmart, and I'd wear a coat, and I'd take 10 games with me like this in my coat, and I'd walk out, and I'd go to the pawn shop, and I'd be able to get $50, and I was homeless for those 2-3 months. I also was homeless, you guys, in Minneapolis, Minnesota, in an abandoned house for 3 weeks, and that's what led me back down here. But it's just like, man, why do we choose to go to these points? Like, nobody was messing with me at that time. Like, nobody was talking to me, and I'm sleeping I remember it was negative 20, and I'm sleeping in a house, but there was like this little loft area up top, and I would sleep up there because heat rises, and I'd bring a blanket, boots, parka, and I'd wake up and my eyes would be swollen shut from the cold. I don't know why that happened, but my eyes were shut, and I was homeless here, and somehow I made it over here, man. And this time, you guys, why I share all these stories, because maybe some of you can relate to these stories leading up to this. Maybe some of you have been here more than once. But this time when I came in there, I abandoned every single idea, thought, whatever it was that I could do or how I could live my life. One of them being, when I get out of here, I can drink. Like, I burnt that one to the ground. I know now that I cannot drink at the bottom of a 24-ounce or 40-ounce or whatever, there's always a rig waiting for me. See, what happened to me when I did that is because it was like, you know what? All bets are off. You know what? This isn't cutting it. I need the real stuff. I need what I came here for, right? And there goes Tyler. All of a sudden, he's at a pool party at some nice hotel downtown or apartment somewhere, and all of a sudden, he's back on the east side doing what he's doing. And to be honest with you, that was normal to me, and I liked it way better over there. I liked it way better on the east side. I liked it way better on the street. I felt way better engaging in conversation with people that were talking about using drugs or talking about getting drugs. Like, I didn't want to talk to you about sports or a book or literature. I wanted to talk to the people that were talking about drugs and hang out with those people. So, man, 14 days in, I'm starting to get kind of nervous, you guys. I don't know if any of you can relate to this, but I start to get really agitated, and everybody looking at me is just really, they're talking about me. They know something I don't know. Homeboy took a cigarette. Homegirl XYZ. I'm getting kind of weird, you guys, and I'm in treatment at Austin Recovery this time. 14 days, and it's always about 2 weeks for me, a full week of like off of detox, you know. And I just want to leave. I have like somehow $10. I'm like, you know what? $10 can give me half a 20. I'll walk there, and I make up this big ass plan in my head. I'm like, I'm getting out of here. And something stopped me. And that night I hit my knees in the bunk beds. And I swear to God, I called out to something. And I just said, you know what? I'm tired. I'm done. Just something, come in and do something. I don't know what the prayer was. It was a Hail Mary. I didn't know who was going to catch it, but I just threw it out there. And all of a sudden, I had this epiphany little thought in my mind. I'm like, you know what? I've been here 5 times. This time, I want to try. I want to just try. Maybe it works. Maybe the time will go by faster if I try. So I had a binder or a packet, and they had certain lessons in there. And I was like, you know what? I've excelled in things before. And it wasn't quite this storyline, but I'm giving it to you guys this way. But I'm sitting there, you know what? I'm going to try. I'm going to try this Austin recovery thing. In the next 2 weeks, they kind of started to go by. And I started to be able to smell again. And I started to be able to engage with people again. And I started to have a little bit of fun in rehab, believe it or not. And all of a sudden, I got sober November 23rd, 2013. And all of a sudden, I'm getting ready to get out and it's Christmas. And I'm getting ready to get out of here, and my mom's very, very hesitant to do anything around me. And she let me come to her house. But I remember at graduation, you guys, they made a circle up, and they'll give us the key tags. It says where my healing, or I think it says where my healing began, and then the other side it says Austin Recovery. And I still have that keychain, but I remember receiving that keychain. And I graduated high school. I even went to a little bit of college, and I went to hair school. I've got a couple little certificates. And I remember that 30-day rehab gray keychain diploma, if you will, was like, man, it was like the greatest thing I had ever received. I felt so many good emotions, I was so optimistic. First, I mean, I've walked across the stage in like one of the best high schools in the U.S. It's like a silver school or something. And I got that little key tag and it meant the world to me. But this is the crazy thing about heroin. And some of you are hip to this right now. And meth and crack and alcohol and marijuana and Xanax. Some of you are hip to this, but this is the thing about those things I just mentioned. Right now, if you are anything like me at this point, that thing for you is doing push-ups. And it's getting big. And I don't have a monkey on my back. I got King Kong beating on my back. I don't know if any of you can relate to that. But I just don't get a little monkey on my back. I got this big old gorilla that I cannot get off. And I swear to God, you guys, I got out of Austin Recovery. I had the key tag in my hand, and I was so excited for my life. And the day I got out, I found a Milwaukee drill in the closet, and it was worth 40 bucks at the pawn shop. I know because I've pawned it before. My mom unpawned it. And I'm sitting there. I got a throwaway AT&T phone. You have to have it plugged in the right way. If it moves, it'll break the battery charge, and it'll die. You have to have it plugged in the right way. It's on speaker, and I'm calling a middleman trying to get high. 30 days, my first time graduating. I got 5 pamphlets prior to this. I've been here 5 times. I finally successfully completed the program, and I'm calling the middleman. Holy shit. How many of you can relate to something like that? Huh. That feeling, you guys, is so, it's so helpless, so hopeless. It's just like, man, how am I here again? I was just so excited and so optimistic. I was already rebuilding my life. The day I picked up that key tag, my life was rebuilt because I rebuilt it. I'm going to be a better son. I'm going to get my girl back. I'm going to finish X, Y. I'm going to get a job. I'm going to get my driver's license. And you guys, what happened was I got hit by a train and I could not shake it. But I swear to God, you guys, if I'm lying, I'll get struck by lightning right now and I'll just fall off this little area right here. If I'm lying, I'm dying. I had the thought to call one of the weirdos that came in and spoke to me at the Austin Recovery. I had a list of phone numbers. I knew their schedules. Like when Dennis would come in or Paul Robbins would call in or come into the place, like I knew what they did. Because remember, I'm doing this like clockwork. Every 3 months, I'm in here. I said, you know what? I'm going to call one of them this time. So I pick up the phone. It weighs 10,000 pounds. And I call Paul Robbins. And I literally had a cat at my tongue. I couldn't speak. I said a few words to get him to know who I was. I was like, he's like, yeah. He's like, you got a big book? Actually, you know, I couldn't even speak. Like, he figured out who I was somehow. I don't know how. But I could not speak. And I remember this like yesterday. I couldn't speak. And he goes, Tyler, do you got a big book? And I go, yeah. He goes, turn to page 76, read the 7-step prayer, call me right back. And that was like it. Now, normally when shit like that happens to me, guys, don't miss this because this is the key. I do go back to figuring, because see, the reason why I called Paul is because I made a deal with myself, is that if the middleman doesn't come through within an hour, I'm going to do something different. If he doesn't come through within an hour, because that almost is as bad as the, you know, having to, you know, be sick, you know, the waiting game. So the guy didn't come through, and I called Paul, and when I called him, he said that. So what happened was this time, you guys, I didn't just go back to trying to hustle up the middleman. I actually went and read that book, and I read page 76, and a lot of you probably know the 7-step prayer, but I'm just going to read it. It says, my creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, the good and the bad. And I remember right away when I said good and bad, that, what I was getting ready to do, was bad. And I remember, it felt like it left. And then, I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go up from here to do your bidding. Amen. And I remember in treatment, because I was being active, I was helping while I was in rehab, and I remember feeling useful. And then I remember reading that prayer, and all of a sudden, boom. If you've ever been in an old gymnasium and you turn the lights on, they slowly start to rise. And then they're at full brightness. That's what happened to me. I read the prayer, and boom, I snapped out of it. Again, I can't make this up. This is my story. And I called him back. He said he gave me an assignment. I started doing step work. I've never been to a meeting outside of what they brought me to in rehab. But I did just that. And the next day, I did just that. And the next day was Christmas. My mom, I don't know why, made steak and lobster. And we live on Runberg in a one-bedroom. And she's cooking steak and lobster. I'm like, this is amazing. I know they weren't going to have this in treatment. And I just kept plugging away, you guys. And I got a sponsor. I got to work with my sponsor. And he asked me some questions. He said, Tyler, are you willing to go to any lengths for victory over heroin? And, you know, I hesitated for a second, but I said yes. Because it seemed like a big commitment. And up until this point, remember, I got the list. I got the list of all the numbers. Because people come in here, they share the story, and they're like, hey, give me your number. And I wrote down the number. I got all these phone numbers. And I remember the last go-around, when I would get people's phone numbers, they would say stuff like this. They're like, man, we know you. You're here every 3 months. Why are you writing down our number? And I'm like, because I'm going to call you when I get out. And they would say, make sure your feet match your mouth. And to this day, I share that with a lot of people. Because I would always write down their number. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to call you this time. And, you know, I carry that and I share it with you guys because that's something I had to do, is make sure my feet match my mouth. I was willing to go to any lengths. Not only did I say it, I did it. And started to get to work. Step one, step two, step three. Got through that, you know, few days. And for some reason, I started like doing meditation on YouTube videos. 10-minute meditations in the morning. Nobody told me to do it. I had been told and shared in treatment that it was good to do, but nobody like said, hey, here's the plug and play. Here's what you need to do. I said that before I started this. And because I have really important stuff to share, and I knew that I would do that. So I got to work, and I made a list of amends and people that I had wrong. I started to write down my inventory. And the inventory process for me was beautiful because I learned who the fuck I was. I was a liar. I was a thief. I was manipulative. I was entitled. I justify everything. I'm judgmental. Like, I'm everything I didn't want to be. And I finally had to look at myself on paper, and I was like, and I just couldn't run from it anymore. Like, I really wasn't a thief, even though I got arrested for robbery and burglary. I swear to God, I did not call myself a thief. I really didn't think I was. And when I learned who I was, I learned who I didn't want to be anymore. So I started marching away from that. Right? And this stuff didn't happen overnight. I think I was about 3 weeks in when I started to do that. And then all of a sudden, I had this list of cards to make amends to. Share two of them real quick. One of them was at Walmart. I had to go into Walmart. Now, when I got out of treatment, I went to Goodwill, and I was trying to get a job or whatever, get some help over there. There's decent resources. And I found out I had a warrant for robbery, and immediately I was... And the funny thing about it is, you know, now that I'm sharing it, I never thought about getting high. Normally I would, but I just remember thinking, I'm screwed, you know? But I didn't think about getting high, which was cool. Ever since that day, you guys, I have not had a thought that jumps on me that I can't shake of getting high, which is an amazing thing. So I go to make amends at Walmart, knowing that I have a warrant active for robbery. They've already kicked in a couple houses looking for me. And I got to walk by the cop at the Walmart, because, you know, there's a cop at Walmart, and I'm scared to death. And my sponsor's in the car. He's like, Tyler, you want to do heroin again? I said, no. He's like, then you better go. I emptied my pockets. I had a cell phone somehow at the time. And I gave him everything because I really didn't think I was going to come back. And I walked in there shaking like this, and I asked for a manager, and the manager wasn't there. So some other assistant manager came out, and I told him the story. And they're like, hold on, let me go get the manager. I thought you were the manager. And so they come back, and I tell them the story, and they said, wait a minute, when did this happen? I said, 6 months ago. They said, wow, we've never caught the ones we didn't catch. And I'll say it again, we've never caught the ones we didn't catch. They never caught me. I turned myself in, and they were really baffled by it. So I'm like, listen, I got to pay this money. But like, no, insurance covered it. don't worry about it. We wrote that off that month that it happened. And I was like, no, you guys got to understand, like, I don't want to get high again. I got to pay the money back. Can I donate it or something? They're like, come back tomorrow. We'll have something set up for you. So that next 24 hours, I was paralyzed by fear, thinking that I'm going to have to go back up there, and they're going to have, like, cops waiting for me. I went to the Walmart. They said, hey, listen, we do a fundraiser. You've probably experienced them at checkout. They're like, hey, do you want to donate a dollar to such, you know, whatever program? And they're like, we run this for Dell's Children's every twice a year, whatever. You know, come back at this date, and we'll be running this fundraiser for 2 weeks. So I didn't have the money then, but I did go back over time, and I have the receipt still. It's like this long because it's like $5, $5, $5, $5, $5, and I paid the money back to Walmart. But I share that story because I was paralyzed by fear in the parking lot, and I didn't want to, and I didn't even really need to go back into that Walmart and share this, make those amends. But since then, I've been able to go to several conferences. I always love the conference that we have here, the Capital of Texas Conference. I've been able to go to Las Vegas for an AA conference, and I always go up to people after meetings, and I ask if somebody says something that I like. I always want to know, like, why they said that. Where is it in the book? Can you show me where it says that in the book? Like, I just seek this knowledge. And I don't seek it from the people that are, like, in the back ready to go. I'm seeking from the people that are, like, on fire. They got the lights on in their head. Like, I'm only hanging out with those cats. I don't really hang out with the cats anymore. They're talking about the stuff that really has nothing to do with any type of positivity in my life. I went to Minneapolis to make those amends, you guys. And those people that I robbed or burglarized, they were friends of mine. Because that's the kind of thief I am. I steal from my friends, the ones that trust me. And I broke into their house, and I went to go pay that back. And they were like, Tyler, man, we can't believe to see you right now. It's been like 7 years, you know. And I went up there with a lot of cash so I could pay back the money. We took TV and ran down the street. And they're like, we don't want any cash from you. Donate it to the rehab you went to. So you know where I donated the money to. But when I went there, I had another friend that I also stole from, and I stored my stuff over at their house. And they had all my stuff, my diploma, my birth certificate, bunch of stuff that's really important. And when they were going to throw it away, the mom said, no, he's going to be back. Give me that. Sure enough, when I made that amends in August of this year, she gave me my birth certificate and my diploma. And I just remember, she's like, I thought she was going to the house to get a bat or something. You know, she was drinking a little wine. I went to their house where it happened. And, I mean, I'm just sharing some miracles with you guys. There's a lot of them in this room. What it looks like for me today, it's pretty simple. You know, it was a lot of work up front. I had to take care of that robbery. I had to go back and get my driver's license. I rode a bus to meetings for 9 months. Rode a bus to sponsor people. Was blessed enough to meet some people in recovery that helped me out with some jobs and helped me out at times. And, now I just do a little inventory, a little housekeeping. And, I'm lying. I do a lot of shit. But I'm just going to read this to you guys because I don't want to go over too much here, keep everybody, but there's something that I meditate daily and I share with sponsees. And this is really cool because this was when Dr. Bob was in 1950, if anybody's 50, 55, there was an international AA conference in Cleveland. And think about it, 1950, 1955. It's the first ever international AA conference. And Dr. Bob is very sick 5-6 months leading up to this. Dr. Bob, one of the founding fathers of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is, you know, what got me sober, keeps me sober, amongst a few other things. And he said this at a podium. It's 4 minutes long. But he says, my good friends in AA and of AA, I feel I'd be very remiss if I didn't take this opportunity to welcome you here to Cleveland, not only to this meeting, but those that have already transpired. I hope very much that the presence of so many people and the words you have heard will prove an inspiration to you, not only to you, But may you be able to impart that inspiration to the boys and girls back home who are not fortunate enough to be able to come. In other words, we hope that your visit here has been both enjoyable and profitable. I get a big thrill out of looking over the vast sea of faces like this with the feeling that a possibility, that possibly some small thing I did a number of years ago played an infinitely small part in making this meeting possible. I also get quite a thrill when I think that we all had the same problem. We all did the same things. We all get the same results in proportion to our zeal, enthusiasm, and stick-to-itiveness. This is all quote him. If you'll pardon the injection of a personal note at this time, let me say that I've been in bed 5 of the last 7 months, and my strength hasn't returned as I would like. So my remarks of necessity will be very brief. There are 2 or 3 things that flash into my mind which would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. 1, the simplicity of our program. Let's not louse it all up with Freudian complexes and things that are interesting to the scientific mind, but have very little to do with our actual AA work. Our 12 steps, when immersed down to the last resolve, resolve themselves in the words love and service. So those are 2 things that I personally can share with you that I know I carry with me. And we understand what love is, and we understand what service is. So let's bear those 2 things in mind. Let us also remember to guard that erring member of the tongue, meaning watch what you say and how you say it to people. And if we must use it, let us use it with kindness and consideration and tolerance. And 1 more thing, none of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken the time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, to do numerous little kind and thoughtful acts on our behalf. So let us never get such a degree of smug complacency that we're not willing to extend or attempt to extend to our less fortunate brothers that help, which has been so beneficial to us. And then he finishes with, thank you so very much. But I just like to share that because, you guys, that was in 1955, the first ever international conference of Alcoholics Anonymous, first. And this is one of the founding fathers, which, by the way, I've been to his house. I've been able to go to Akron and see all the cool stuff. He shares 4 minutes. And what does he share? We all get the same results pending the amount of stick-to-itiveness, enthusiasm, and the 3rd thing, zeal, right? We all get the same results. It says in the big book, rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed a path. They used to say never. I just followed a path, you guys. I don't even, when I talk to people, I don't tell them what to do. I just give them suggestions. Like, look, this is what I did. And love and service, right? That's it. He said, let's just remember, man. So I keep things pretty simple, you guys. I don't get, you know, too caught up in XYZ. Close with this. In 2013, I got to share 20-minute. They did like the 3-person speak for 20-minute thing at AR. And I remember talking to a kid, or Sharon right here, but over there. And I said, you know, I'm rich. I'm a millionaire. And I shared that story. And I was like, isn't that cool? Well, clap your hands. Because like, they were clapping up until that point. And then I told him, I said, I'm rich in spirit. Like, there was a kicker to it. And I'm still standing here very rich in spirit, but materially, prosperity, external, I make 4 times what my mom makes, and I'm not homeless anymore, and I have my own crib, and my own car, and my own business, and, like, I don't even know how this happened, you guys. Right? And then afterwards, kid came up to me, like, hey, man, will you sponsor me? I was going to ask you, actually, until you told me you weren't rich. The kid came up to me afterwards and was excited. He thought I had, like, a lot of money at the time. And he said he wanted me to sponsor him because he thought I had money. He's like, after you said you were rich in spirit, it was over. So, you know, I actively work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I pray to God, and I thank God for my recovery. Thank God for all of you letting me share with you tonight. I'll just close with that.